Hello and welcome, everybody, to a special edition of Atlanta Business Radio On Location. We are on location here today down on the beautiful campus of Emory University at the Guazzetta Business School. We're here to interview Dean Erica James here today. And alongside me is my co-host for the day, Sandy Welfare from Women in Technology. How are you, Sandy?
I'm doing well, Ryan. Thank you.
All right. I'm so used to seeing you in the studio, but here we are together on location. Thank you so much for making this happen today. And we're very privileged to have Dean James joining us. So welcome to the program, Dean James.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
All right. So thank you so much again for joining us. And we look forward to a good conversation about a lot of different topics today. But let's start for our listeners, if you would please, just share with them a little bit about your background and what led you up to be the dean of such a prestigious business school here.
Well, thank you for having me, Ryan. I am an academic, have been a lifelong academic, undergraduate degree in a field called organizational psychology, which means I had a number of options when I went to pursue a PhD, which I did at the University of Michigan in organizational psychology, and chose through the support of my faculty colleagues to pursue an academic career as a professor in a business school setting. First job was at Tulane University in their business school, then spent a few years there, came to the Goizueta Business School at Emory for a few years, left there to go to the University of Virginia, where I got my first touch of administrative experience in higher education. And then Emory came knocking and said, mm-hmm. Would you like to be considered for our dean? And lo and behold, here I am.
That was 2014. And from what you described there, you've been all around the country and studying and meeting people. And it seems like everywhere you go somewhere new, you have to get immersed yourself in the new culture, the new community. So you're good at getting to know new people, it sounds like.
I am. And that comes from a long background growing up, moving around. So with my family as a child, we lived in Texas. I was actually born in Bermuda. But as an American citizen, because my parents were just happened to live in Bermuda at the time, lived in Pennsylvania, lived in Texas, lived in St. Louis. And then when I went to college after Texas, it was to California and then Michigan. So I am very accustomed to moving around the country.
Well, I'd love to get your thoughts on Atlanta. You know, you've seen it change through the years, and you're certainly made this home now for a number of years. What are your thoughts about the business community and business culture here in Atlanta?
The business community in Atlanta is vibrant and growing more so every day. There's something special here, I think, in large part because of the ease of access to get to Atlanta. So with having the Hartsfield Airport here and the number of Fortune 500 and Fortune 1000 companies that are headquartered here, the caliber of the higher educational institutions that are here, it just makes it a really attractive place. The cost of living is low, so it's a great place to do business, and it's a great place to be a business school.
Right, and it's an international city.
It is, absolutely.
And I think that reflects in some of the student body here at the business school as well. Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the challenges that faces you from being the dean of the school to making it welcoming to so many people from all over the world?
That's a great question. It's actually not that hard because Atlanta in and of itself, and particularly Emory, has such a good reputation of being open and receptive and friendly to people from all over the world. And our objective is to ensure that we are providing the best educational experience for people, regardless of whether they're coming from Gwinnett County or whether they're coming from South Korea.
Right.
And we've got the faculty and we've got the infrastructure now in place with a large number of alumni from all over the world who can really help to make that happen for us.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And as Atlanta grows and as the world becomes more and more connected, this institution here has a way to separate itself from the other schools out there and gain that competitive edge. Mm-hmm. You know, what are some of those things that the business school here does to gain that competitive edge and recruit these good talent to come to school here?
Well, Emory and the Goizueta Business School has an international reputation. And so we are able to leverage the brand and the reputation that exists being a part of this great university. The fact that as recently as last year, Emory being able to be well recognized as the place for Ebola, if you will, has helped to put even more attention and a bigger spotlight on our university. And as a business school, as a part of that university, it just means that we're able to capitalize in ways that are unique and important to us.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. And I'm a native Atlanta myself, and Emory has always been something that, you know, we've known about as a child and as a grown up here as a place to go if you want to separate yourself from some of those others out there in the academic world. And so, but you mentioned a second ago, you consider yourself an accidental academic. Yes. Is that what you wanted to be? What did you originally want to do when you were younger?
It wasn't clear what I wanted to do, but I never thought I would be doing this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My stepfather was a clinical psychologist, and so I learned about the field of psychology very early in life and thought that was interesting and sort of assumed that I would follow a similar path, which is why college and graduate school is focused in psychology. But it was later in my educational experience that I learned about the field of organizational psychology and saw the application of understanding human behavior in a business context, and being able to combine those two fields was extraordinarily interesting to me. And I say that I'm the accidental academic in that I hadn't envisioned myself in the field of higher education as a professor. I thought, and in fact, up until the last minute, I had job offers from a number of corporate institutions, but it was my mentor in graduate school who said, give academia a try for a year, and if you don't like it, you can always go back into consulting or into the corporate sector. And X number of years later, yep, I'm still in academia.
Here we are. So you listened to your mentor.
I did.
And the decision was right for you, and you've really embraced it ever since.
Absolutely.
And you're also a noted researcher. You've done many papers. And is that what it's basically kind of the wheelhouse for that, is your clinical psychology or your mm-hmm. research on that avenues?
I have used the either personal experiences or experiences that I was familiar with to fuel my scholarly interests. And so when I was in graduate school and then in the early part of my career, really wanting to understand matters of diversity in the workplace, watching my mother, who worked both in education but also in the business field, try to navigate what that was like for her. And so I wanted to understand what it was she needed to navigate and why and how she was able to do that. And that then parlayed into understanding or wanting to look at how organizations respond to challenges with respect to diversity, and looking at class action discrimination lawsuits, which then parlayed my interest into looking at crisis management in general. So it's been a nice trajectory, all grounded and fueled by my interest in diversity, but really now leading to me to become an expert in the field of crisis management more broadly.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the main topics we want to cover here today, is diversity, and certainly women in the workplace, and how we need to strive to make those numbers increasing for women here in 2016 and going forward. And so let's talk about the diversity here and some of the things in you envisioning to submit your legacy here at the Guazzetta Business School.
So last year was a challenging year across the nation when it comes to diversity, particularly with respect to underrepresented minorities. And so as a university, we have taken those challenges and those issues very seriously. As a business school and as an African-American woman leading a top-tier business school, it is certainly incumbent upon me to be a leader in that regard. At the business school, not only are underrepresented minorities a focal area that we're looking to enhance the climate for, both with respect to our students and our faculty, but to your point, it is also largely about women. Mm. Women are less well represented in business school settings than they are in other aspects of higher education, particularly the higher you go. So going from assistant professor to full professor, going from full professor to administrative roles, going from administrative roles to deans, the numbers just get smaller and smaller. And yet, if we take out 60-70% of the population from participating in the business world, in the business vernacular and the business mm-hmm. experience, then you're missing out on an incredible amount of talent. And so it's incumbent upon business schools. I think we bear a significant responsibility to ensure that we are creating environments that allow all people to succeed, and making our environment particularly more open and receptive to women.
Right. And part of that is getting to these young girls when they're younger, getting them involved, letting them know that business is a path to success and happiness in life. And that's where WIT comes in a lot of times. You guys are out there helping the young girls stay them focused all the way up until it's time to go on to college and universities. And so, right, Sandy?
Absolutely. And I also think that as we're looking at ways that we can enhance business schools, we should not just say technology, for example. We should say business school and what you could do in the fields of technology, because I think that's where many people kind of think that they separate, but they really don't.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. And so when you get that MBA, it can really separate yourself from the rest of the working professionals out there. It certainly has helped you and others. And how important is that for a young girl these days to know that that's something they should embrace and work and strive for?
Well, I probably have a very interesting thought on it, because I think that women in general will have to put up more of a defense on why they should be promoted. And I think that the more you can align yourself to what's important to the business, then the more you're going to be those who are championed. So if I were to look at my career and I would, you know, think back to, you know, prior to nonprofit, I was promoted probably because I was one of the very few MBA women in the field. And at Lucent Technologies at the time, they were inspiring more males to go and get their MBAs. And so it's quite interesting that unless you actually had that as a piece of paper, that would basically be the reason why someone would champion you. And So I think it's very important for women to put as much into investing in themselves as possible, because you're not necessarily going to be coming to the table with everything being weighed equal.
Right. And it's really impacted your career. And like you said earlier, separated yourself from the rest of the folks out there by having that continuing education. And that's something you continue to preach to the young college students as well, is stick with it, get your MBA, work hard, and then, you know, good things will happen for you.
Absolutely. But I'd also like to say that our school in particular, but so many other business schools around the world, also recognize that women and girls may come into the field of business at different points in their career. So we, for example, have an undergraduate business school degree called the BBA. If that's not your time frame, then we have the Master's of Business Administration for when you have a bit more experience working. But also we have executive programs for even the more experienced industry leader who may need to supplement their background, their knowledge base with an MBA degree. And then we also offer non-degree business programs for people who don't necessarily want or need the degree, but want access to the fundamentals of business acumen, and they can get them in those short courses. So I think I share that to help people understand that anywhere along your career trajectory, you have access to getting this information. So it's never too late to feel like you've missed your opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And we spoke a few minutes ago about the gender imbalance in corporate America. Do you see that same imbalance here in the student body?
We do, interestingly, depending on the population. So at our undergraduate business school level, it's almost at parity. So about 50% of our students who are getting their BBA are women students. At the MBA level, that's where it starts to trail off. And then the higher mm-hmm. you go, the fewer women that you tend to see. But we are now averaging over 30% women in our classes at the MBA level. Mm-hmm. We certainly would like to see that expand, and we are putting some things in place to make sure that we are reaching those students to entice them, whether they come to our school or any other business school, letting them understand or helping them to understand what the options are and the career varieties that you can open yourself up to by pursuing an MBA.
And why do you see that drop off in between the BBA and the MBA? Is it just people are going different directions in their life? Is there a smaller pool of women to kind of come on board and take those classes?
Well, there's certainly not a smaller pool. In fact, I think now across the nation, women are 51% of the population. So that shouldn't affect things. But what we do see with the MBA degree, typically the value comes from being able to apply the work experience that you have to that degree, which means you're coming into the MBA degree at a time when you're 26, 27, 28 years old, which for many women also is competing with other things that they want to do that might be, you know, connected to their personal life.
Correct.
Or starting a family. And that can be tricky. It's also, you know, it's an expensive degree for some, and people aren't always aware of the resources that are available to help offset some of those costs associated with going back to school after you've been in the workplace. So I think there are a variety of reasons. And quite frankly, I think that business schools need to do a better job at being welcoming and receptive to women students. Some of the vernacular that we use to describe our programs are very male or almost militaristic in nature, and that can be a turnoff mm-hmm. to women. So helping them understand that this is a place where they can thrive and succeed is incumbent upon business schools to do.
Right. And it sounds like you're understanding a lot of these needs. You've already identified some of these reasons that things are happening. So having a plan to counter those is a great way to continue success in your student body for sure. Now let's talk about the disparity with minority women. Mm-hmm. So that's even greater, I imagine. And what are some of the things you're doing to make sure they're getting all the outlets they need?
For students or for faculty?
Or for minority women in leadership positions, yes.
So as a minority woman in a leadership position, I bring to the table my own personal experiences. And I think that has helped informed me on things that we can put in place. But it starts largely with having the gall to have the conversation and recognize that this is an issue that we can't sweep under the rug. We've got to talk about this, and we've got to work together as a faculty, as a school, as a community to seek out minority women, to support minority women, and to create environments that will allow them to be successful. And that's something that we are definitely trying to do here at the business school.
And that shouldn't be just the role of minority women.
Absolutely.
To help them. It should be something we should all be focused on. What can a guy like me, who I'm not in the student body, I'm not, well, other than having you on my radio show to mm-hmm. talk about it, but is there things I can do to help promote or get the word out? And also regarding WIT, there's things we can do if I'm not in that kind of in that ecosystem to help expose others to it.
Well, from the business school standpoint, there are absolutely things you can do. I think back to the mentors that I've had in my life. I've never really had a Black woman mentor, which would be natural because that is my demographic. Mm-hmm. So what that says to me is I've been able to be successful in large part because of the outreach of people who didn't look like me. And we have to recognize and allow people to feel comfortable starting to build relationships across difference.
Right. So
I think that's one thing that you as just a human being in the world can do as mm-hmm. you meet and interact with people who are different from you. Talk to them about things that you know. You've been exposed to me. You've now been exposed to our business school. Mm-hmm. And you can share that kind of information with people who might have an inkling of an interest in pursuing business education.
That's an excellent point for sure. Just get involved. Listen to the people you're talking to. And if you feel the urge to give back, then start giving back and either through mentorship or outreach. And the same thing with WIT. You know, what are some things that we can do as a community who are not necessarily, you know, in that ecosystem can help you help further your cause and your mission?
Well, shows like this, Ryan, are definitely the reasons why we continue to partner with you so that you're advocates. So mm-hmm. the minute that this is broadcast on your radio show and people are picking it up over the internet as well as social media, this helps get the word out. And I think the more we can have open conversation, the better it will be. Anytime that you're needing to do some major change, it never comes from the people who are being impacted having those conversations, similar conversation about women. As long as women are talking to just women, the change is never going to happen. And so like our upcoming May event where we will have a panel of male leaders in the STEM fields, and it's titled Men Who Get It. This is a conversation that needs to continue at all levels across all parts of business. And I think that that's where you have either the buy-in or you don't. And I think that that's the reason why we're still needing to have those conversations, and it needs to be inclusive of everyone.
And if I remember correctly, you've mentioned on other past shows that you've had several mentors that really have helped you out, and they weren't African-American women. They were people outside of your comfort zone or perhaps somebody you've never done business with, but really championed your cause and your mission in life. And that's a great way for others to get involved too.
And I really have to say my success has really been from one African-American male and then other white males who've said, go to Singapore, Sandy, you can do it. Mm-hmm. And then go to London, Sandy, you can do it. And it's not as if I didn't think I could do it. They were the ones that just pushed me over the line and basically said, get out of your comfort zone. So I think you probably might have had similar scenarios, Dean James, but I think that most times it's a person who sees a belief in you and pushes you beyond your comfort zone. And I think that that's where the mentoring piece is. I mean, it's paramount for women to be successful.
And not only in their early stages of their career, but also as they're trying to advance their career and they're a little more seasoned in the business world. So even today, I imagine there's somebody you can call or have mentorship type relationships with who can help you take your professional and personal life to the next level as well.
Well, I know for me, it's like, I think actually as I get older, I need it more. And it's mainly because you're in a space now of needing to figure out, do I go for me? Do I stay within the nonprofit world or do I go back to corporate? I mean, these are the things that you wrestle with because you're really trying to figure out, if I have so many years left to work, what will I do next? And I think that these are the relationships that help guide me in those spaces.
And if I could just add on to that, I think it's also important to recognize that as you mature in your career, there are fewer and fewer people ahead of you for whom that can provide that kind of mentoring. And so expanding your reach and looking at people who are in parallel positions, even people who might be in lower positions from the hierarchical right. perspective, they have real value and there are things that you can learn from them. And so I've found myself broadening my reach with respect to who I turn to for advice and
right. And to add on to that, for me personally, is just as I'm looking for a hand up to help me and advance my career, I'm still reaching a hand down to those who are in situations that I once was. And so mentor goes both ways, you know, as you're trying to grow, but you're helping others grow as well, for sure. And let's talk about the involvement of WIT and here at Emory and what is like the relationship between y'all.
Well, we have a great relationship with Emory, particularly the Goizueta Business School. One of our board members, Jackie Breiter, is CIO and I believe COO well for the Goizueta Business School. And so she's been an important piece to keep us connected to the female leadership, not only at the school, but also perhaps, you know, those who are going to be the next generation of leaders. And the school has also offered two executive MBA programs to our WIT community. And so we've had two winners that were just announced in November. And that helps us to keep women in the field and basically enhancing their business capability because they are going through these executive MBA programs.
Mm-hmm. And we've mentioned how WIT is helping young girls, Girl Scout age, all the way up to the career-minded professional. But at this level is probably when it's most critical to have those next steps and plans in place that once they graduate from the school here, that they can begin getting involved with WIT, or whether they leave Atlanta or go to another place or get in that corporate work life there. That's a great place to start getting connected just as they're beginning to transition from their academic career to their professional career here at the school. And so, I see you're looking forward to some more partnerships with Dean James, and you've got an event coming up, which you're going to be part of. You care to share with our listeners about that?
Yes, I have the distinction of being one of their speakers at a breakfast series next week. And the woman that Sandy just mentioned, the CIO and COO, this week. Thank you, Wednesday.
This week, okay.
Forgot it's Monday already. So I'll be presenting a few remarks on my career and trajectory, and then my colleague, Jackie Breiter, will join me on stage and we'll have a bit of Q&A back and forth. So it should mm-hmm. be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. And then going from there, any other events that WIT has coming up that our listeners should be aware of?
Well, of course, we're hot and heavy into planning for WIT Connect, which is our big fundraiser for the year. And that will be on June 2nd at the Georgia Aquarium. And so we'll be looking forward to seeing Atlanta there.
Right. And mywit.org, if people want more information about how to get involved with that particular event, or maybe they're interested in getting some of their community groups involved out there as well. Always good opportunities for sure. So, and then what about for you, Dean James? Any events that you're going to be part of other than the WIT this week that you would like to share?
This is a heavy week for us.
Okay.
So both on Friday, we have two student-based conferences that are happening. One is the Undergraduate Business School Leadership Conference, which I'm pleased to say that our undergraduate students fully own and run themselves, and they bring or invite students from all over the country, different business schools who will come and attend. And then we have our Diverse Leadership Conference, and very proud there that we have one of our alums, James Dallas, who will be speaking. And James is highly connected into the technology space, and so he will be a featured speaker there, as will James Andrews. So it's going to be a fun week for us.
If listeners want to find out more information or get connected, is there a website they can go to, or any place they can be directed to?
If they go to goizueta.emory.edu, they will on the front page see both of these activities happening. They can click on the links there and get more information.
All right. Sounds good. And as we begin to wrap up here, I always like to turn the conversation to a little more personal thing. So I'd like to find out for you, Dean James, the personal, professional life, how do you balance it all? And what are some of the things you like to do in your off time to refocus and re-energize yourself to do a good job here at the school?
It's funny that you say my off time. I asked my daughter this weekend as I was driving her to some event, I don't even remember which one. And I said, what do you think my hobbies are. She said chauffeuring. So
so no off time for
so
you.
So no
right?
off time for me. But I do think it's actually very important. And I try to instill that in the folks that work for me, because we are going through a tremendous period of growth at the business school. And what I don't want is to burn people out. So it is important, for myself included, to take some time off, take a break, find other things that you enjoy. Life is short. Mm-hmm. Work is important for sure, but it's not the most important thing. And as long as we have friends and family and we we'll always continue to keep those an active part of our lives, then I think we'll have the energy that we need to sustain us going forward.
So when you're not chauffeuring your daughter, I mean, where do you go? Is there a spot in the house you just like to read a book, or do you go to the gym and work out? What do you like to do to really get away from it all?
Depending on the time of year, my favorite spot in my house is actually a deck that looks the swimming pool in the backyard, which is a very pretty setting. And so I like spending time out there in the months that will allow weather-wise that to happen. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I'm a big travel person. So whether it's, you know, going to the beach in South Carolina or traveling to a different country, that is how I get energized. So for me, it's travel.
Well, you're there. You heard it here first, folks. Dean James, you can find her traveling the globe or driving her daughter around town or working hard here at her office at the Guazzetta Business School for sure, and giving back along the way. I think that is something we've certainly identify and resonate with here. So thank you so much for joining us here today. And if we can do anything else to help further or amplify your message here at the Guazzetta Business School, we'd be happy to do so.
Thank you very much, Ryan. It was a pleasure.
All right, Sandy. And for you, any plans coming up or any travel plans for you? Anything exciting that our listeners should know about?
Not anything personally, but I will say I will expect to see everyone in Atlanta at the WIT Connect event June 2nd.
That's right. Go to mywit.org to stay updated and informed on all the information there. So thank you again, Sandy, for making all this happen.
Thank you.
And listeners, you can thank Sandy as well. If you want us to see us back here at the Guazzetta Business School, we can do that as well. So make sure you're following us on Twitter at Business Radio X. You can follow me personally at Ryan Redhawk, and go to check out our website, businessradiox.com. All today's guest information will be posted there later. So please check that out again, businessradiox.com. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X network, I'm Ryan McPherson. We will see you on the radio.